This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to wander into the political realm because, well, they say that all politics are local, and whether you're on the left wing or on the right wing, whether you're a centrist, whether you're a Democrat, you're a Republican, our neighborhood is the neighborhood of vitamins and supplements and natural health, and I think we can all agree on fair access to supplements of our choice. And today we have a topic that is very, very relevant to our future access to supplements of our choice. It has to do with a recent controversy, and I'll set the stage before I introduce today's guest. The recent controversy that arose early this year when the Attorney General of the state of New York issued an embargo on four supplement manufacturers, chains like Walmart, Walgreens, GNC, and Target, were told to stop selling supplements, herbal supplements, that were part of their house brands, because it was ascertained by the Attorney General, Attorney General Schneiderman, here in my fair state of New York, that his investigation had shown that the supplements in question, many of them didn't have hardly any active ingredients, that they were basically just accumulation of plant material, flour, and various other adulterants. And as a result, he launched a big PR campaign to suggest that he was doing something very helpful on behalf of the consumers of New York. Recently, this has morphed into a nationwide effort where Attorney General Schneiderman has asked 19 of his colleagues across the United States, 19 fellow attorney generals, to petition the Food and Drug Administration to enact tighter controls on supplements. He may also thereby encourage attorney generals in other states, perhaps your state, if you're listening from another state besides New York, to enact similar actions against supplement manufacturers selling supplements in their states. What's the truth about this? We've been covering this story from the beginning. And there's, you know, as we stated early on, there are some questions as to the methodology used by Attorney General Schneiderman and his intrepid staff in figuring out whether these supplements were any good. And so today we've invited an expert. She is Dr. Andrea Wong. She's a PhD, and she has a broad range of expertise in international food nutrition regulation, toxicology, and safety assessments. And she also understands international health claims and the kinds of things that are important to regulatory. Regulatory is basically how supplement manufacturers deal with government agencies, so she understands that turf. She has a PhD in toxicology from the University of Toronto, and she's also a member of the Institute of Food Technologists and the Society of Toxicology. She's published works in scientific journals, and she is eminently qualified to weigh in on this important discussion about whether the supplements we use are indeed potentially adulterated, whether Attorney General Schneiderman's assessment of supplements in New York is on the ball. So welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's a pleasure having you on, Dr. Wong.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's my pleasure. And namely, I want you to walk us through something. By the way, you're also you've been appointed as a scientist to the Council for Responsible Nutrition as a vice president of scientific and regulatory affairs. So tell us first, you know, where you're coming from vice president of CRN. What does that mean?
Oh, what that means is I provide support to our member companies from a scientific and regulatory perspective, and also provide tools to educate consumers and healthcare practitioners on the benefits and the safety of dietary supplements.
Okay, and with an accent on safety, right? Because, you know, safety first. Because we certainly don't want to, you know, according to the dictum, do no harm. Because above all, you know, we want people to benefit from supplements. We also want to make sure that they have a safe supply. So is every manufacturer of supplements in the United States and Canada, are they members of CRN? Or is this just a group of certain manufacturers?
We represent a broad range of the dietary supplement industry. So big name brands that you'll see on your supermarket or drugstore shelves, as well as smaller companies that manufacture and market finished products. And in addition to that, the suppliers who provide the ingredients to those manufacturers.
Yeah, so recently there was sort of a bust of supplements that contained like a speed-like ingredient, and manufacturers certain supplement chains pulled these products off the market. They had names like Black Scorpion and K2 Blast and things like that, supplements that I've never personally heard of. I don't know anyone, nobody that I know of takes these supplements, but they are out there. Are those the manufacturers that constitute CRN, or is it more the big mainstream companies that people are more likely to take supplements from?
Definitely the latter, the mainstream companies. And it's really important to note that the products that you were talking about, they're masquerading as supplements. They're not legitimate dietary supplement companies. They are products that, they provide products that contain illegal drugs, and they shouldn't be labeled or marketed as dietary supplements.
Okay, so it's kind of a sleight of hand. They say, well, it's from natural. Maybe they distill it from some exotic nut, but what they do is they take it to some kind of fancy lab, and maybe it originally starts as a nut, but you can also make speed from cough syrup and decongestant. So you can transform. You can buy the TV show, what's it called? Breaking Bad. You know, all you need is, you know, you can buy enough cough syrup and you can biotransform things into harmful substances. So that's not the supplement industry we're talking about.
Definitely not.
Okay. And I believe it's your boss who coined a term, which is a great term, Duffy McKay, who is the head of your department at the Council for Responsible Nutrition. I think he coined the term a tale of two industries. Is he not the one who coined that term? Because it's a great, if he didn't, then, you know, I'm sorry to attribute it to him. But it means really that we've got a situation where we have the responsible manufacturers, and there are a few outliers. And, you know, just as in many fields, you know, like politics automobile mechanics, used car salespeople, the responsible folks get tarred with the reputation of the least common denominator, the ones who are, you know, breaking bad.
Exactly. You know, these problems are not unique to our industry. There's a problem across all industries, like you mentioned. And so, indeed, that term you were mentioning, a tale of two industries, that is something that we coined. It was actually Steve Mister, our president.
Oh, I'm sorry, Steve Mister, whom I did.
The right organization.
Right.
So
I got mixed up. But I did interview Steve Mister, who's really your Uber boss. He's president and CEO of CRN. And so to fairly attribute it, it is a term that emanated from CRN. But Steve Mister was the originator of that term. And it's a good way to look at it. Okay. So I've got in front of me a very technical document entitled The Capabilities and Limitations of DNA Barcoding of Botanical Dietary Supplements, March 2015. And its authors are, they all seem to be professors, PhDs, eminent researchers. Three out of four of them are PhD scientists. So, Kit, you're familiar with this document, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so could you walk us through what are the what is it saying, and what are the implications for our listeners who are supplement consumers?
Well, when the New York Attorney General's investigation was first announced, we were really concerned because he used DNA barcode testing, which we know is not an appropriate test to determine what is in an herbal supplement. So this new scientific white paper on DNA barcode testing identifies major weaknesses in the New York AG's investigations and explains why the test was wrong for this purpose. And this paper was written by four recognized scientific experts who understand DNA testing and also the complexities of plant identification.
Right. So these people are botanists. They understand plants. And so just what is DNA barcoding? Because, you know, a lot of people watch CSI and they think, well, that's the ultimate tool for identifying the culprit. You know, if you want to find the perpetrator, you check for the DNA. So if the DNA is missing, then the supplement doesn't have any active materials. I mean, I think that's the assumption that the governor succumbed to. Perhaps as a layperson, a naive layperson who watches CSI would say, hey, that's the end-all and be-all of testing.
Well, DNA testing is very popular. Like you mentioned, it's widespread in TV shows like CSI, used to solve crimes. It's also used in everyday purposes for identifying different species. So, for example, you can identify different species of fish from DNA testing. And
so in a way, you go to the restaurant and they say that this is a certain type of exquisitely expensive swordfish, but it turns out it's actually counterfeit swordfish. It's a species-specific test. You can tell if it's the correct species, and it may be a substitute, a cheaper substitute.
Exactly, and so it's used for different applications, like for animals, and it can even be used for plants and raw materials, like whole herbs that have been ground to a powder. But it's not appropriate for processed materials such as botanical extracts, which are, you know, some of the products that are in question. And the reason for this is that extracts are made using various processing steps that can remove, damage, or destroy the DNA. And any DNA that might remain in the extract is usually of very low quality, so it could be cut up into really short pieces. So if you think about, you know, your DNA sequence being like words on a page of a book, and you take these pages and you put them through the shredder, you can no longer make sense of them. You can't read them anymore. So DNA barcode testing can't be used for products that are highly processed, like botanical extracts.
Well, an analogy that I gave in describing this to our listeners was if you're looking at the authenticity of fish oil, fish oil is a highly purified product, and is it not possible for a poorer quality fish oil to have residues of literally fish DNA in it, but something that's highly distilled, that's gone through multiple steps of distillation and filtration, that it would just be pure EPA and DHA with very few other residues in it? No genetic material, nothing from the, no fish protein at all, and maybe less fishy odor, and, you know, hence a better product.
Right. And the example you gave is perfect, because the parts of the fish that you're interested in, which is the EPA and the DHA, which are used for the health benefits, are what remains in that highly purified product.
So let's look at an example of one of the products that they criticize, which is ginkgo biloba. Okay, they said that the ginkgo biloba had virtually no traces of ginkgo biloba plant DNA in it. And instead, there was other stuff in it that was unexpected. Let's first tackle a part about that there was no ginkgo biloba DNA. A highly purified, standardized ginkgo biloba extract (GBE). I think there are different designations for that. Would it have DNA in it?
No, you would not expect to have DNA in a highly processed extract, because the DNA would have been either damaged or removed through various processing steps.
Right.
But what does remain are the phytochemicals that confer the benefits, and that's the reason why you're taking those supplements.
So conversely, though, they did say they found some little bit of flour. They found some of the some other things that were in there that, you know, didn't seem like they made sense. I mean, that I think we can knock down the first part of this argument pretty easily, is that it's the wrong test to determine if there's active ingredient. But what about the presence of some of these other so-called adulterants? I mean, there wasn't anything like motor oil in there or arsenic, but they just thought, well, you know, you're not getting what you're bargaining for. You're getting some other fillers and additives that may not be so desirable. Were you concerned about the presence of that in the Attorney General's report?
Well, without being able to see the results or the methodology that was used, we really can't conclude with any certainty where those other ingredients might have come from. But
you have not seen the Attorney General's report?
I know, it's hard to believe, but it's been almost 3 months, and he still has refused to release either the methods that were used or the findings that were the basis for his conclusions.
Right. Well, surely the Attorney General went to law school, and he knows that one of the basic principles of American jurisprudence is that, you know, you can meet your accuser and that you can learn the details of your indictment. You know, you read your Miranda rights as a criminal defendant. When you're subject to a civil lawsuit, there's a bill of particulars, you know, summons and complaint, and you actually see what they're alleging. But so far, we don't even really have that. We see the allegations, but we don't actually see the material basis for the allegations. So it's impossible really to critique the study completely, other than that they said it was DNA barcoding.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate because the Attorney General has come out again and again calling on the supplement industry to be transparent when he himself has refused to be transparent and share the results or the methods that he used.
Well, yeah, and so say the Attorney General was, you know, and we expect this because he's an advocate. You know, we know that that's part of what the Attorney General does. It's kind of like a souped-up, you know, consumer advocate with legal powers. Say he was really concerned about the public welfare of the citizens of New York and perhaps, you know, raise some concerns, but wouldn't it have been a better way to proceed? I mean, this is a rhetorical question, obviously, but I think, you know, you may be able to respond to it, to say, look, we have some concerns about supplements. We did some tests, but before we release the results, we'd like to hear your response. And, you know, there are actually organizations like CRN, you know, with scientists who, you know, well-trained scientists like yourself, a scientific staff, who could have dialogued with the people in Albany and said, okay, look, let us do our own due diligence, and we can demonstrate to you that if we use the right methodology, the results may be different. And before you embarrass yourself, Mr. Attorney General, because we know that you're going on public record with this, and there's a lot of people in New York who are supplement supporters, they like their supplements, and this may be there may be a backlash on this story. Let us inform you and, you know, correct your story so that, you know, if we've done anything wrong, we'd be happy to address it. But, you know, wouldn't that have been a more reasonable way to proceed?
Definitely. I think that is absolutely the way that he should have gone, because the companies that were involved, as well as the broader industry as a whole, would have been happy to provide him with the assistance and the expertise that he needed to look at what is the right test to do to ensure that what's on the label is what's in the product. And the other thing is really to focus his attention on the real problem and not focus on mainstream products or mainstream industry, but the real problem, which is, as we have discussed earlier, companies that are intentionally spiking products with illegal drugs and then calling them dietary supplements.
Right, the outliers in the industry who give everyone a bad name. And I think that that's the orientation of CRN, is the CRN is basically the good guys, and they're saying, look, we better band together and we better self-regulate before the reputation of our industry gets tarnished. We're going to do the responsible thing. And yet, it's got to be, you know, kind of disappointing to you that in spite of your best efforts to burnish the reputation of the industry, that government officials lash out at you ignorantly and indiscriminately.
Yeah, and that's why it was so important to have a scientific white paper that was available for consumers as well as regulators and government officials to have access to really understand the facts and understand what's appropriate and what's not appropriate.
So can you boil down some of the findings for us? Because there's a lot of fancy terminology in this. You know, you critique, or you don't, but, you know, this is prepared by outside experts. And, you know, bottom line, what does it say there in this thing?
Well, beyond recognizing when the test is appropriate and not appropriate, you have to make sure that the test is performed correctly. So you first need to ensure that the method you're using produces accurate and responsible, reproducible results. So when I mean when I say accurate, I mean that you need to take known reference samples and run them through that test, and it should produce a positive result. And we talk about reproducibility. You have to run that same sample, you know, five times, and you should get the same result five times. And if not, there could be an issue with your method. And I bring that up because we know from the limited amount of information that the New York Attorney General has released is that when the same sample was run multiple times, there are inconsistent findings.
Uh-huh.
And so as a scientist, you would immediately question those findings and check your methodology, check to make sure that you're, you know, avoiding contamination, you're running the appropriate controls, and to make sure that the test you're using is reliable.
Well, it sounds like there's different levels of evidence that are acceptable. You know, there's a level of evidence that's acceptable for a press release, and that's a very low level of evidence. And then there's a level of evidence that's acceptable for true scientists, which is what you're concerned about. And, you know, the two differ very much. And on the basis maybe of some foregone conclusions, maybe they already made up their mind that supplements were poor quality, misbranded, and adulterated. And they're pretty sure that they were going to demonstrate that. And they were going to stick to their guns. You know, that's their story, and they're going to stick to it.
Yes, but unfortunately, their story isn't based on facts or on reproducible science. And so it's important that the word is out there that the right science is applied to the right products.
Yeah, I'm going to read from the conclusions because that sort of boils down, if you don't mind, the white paper. It says, popular media through, as we said earlier, through television, radio, newspapers, have created the widespread perception that DNA testing is the pinnacle of quality and reliability, especially when it comes to identification of humans, for example, in forensic investigations, a.k.a. CSI, you know, New York, CSI, Miami, whatever. As a result, society has developed an uncritical and sometimes misplaced acceptance of the ability of DNA testing to be 100% reliable, no matter how it is performed and who performs it. However, the fact is that we would not expect DNA testing of humans to be performed by a botanist. The same holds true in DNA testing of botanical dietary supplements. The specific laboratory and equipment, the particular methods used, and the individual scientists all play an important role in the accuracy and validity of DNA test results. And oh, by the way, it seems to me that I remember that the guy who was entrusted with doing this testing is not an expert in botany. He's an expert in reptile biology. Is that not correct? That's what I heard.
Yeah, you remember correctly. He is an expert in testing DNA of lizards and dinosaurs.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, contrary to what people might think, plant genetics are very complex and requires a high level of expertise and understanding. And so you can't apply your knowledge in one area of science to another without some education and training.
Right. So if I wanted to differentiate between crocodile extract and alligator extract, this is the guy I could turn to. But when it comes to whether it's a good quality ginkgo biloba, perhaps not. All right, I'll continue reading. It's numerous questions and concerns have been raised regarding the NYAG's investigation, including the specific methods used and the experience of the scientists and ultimately the New York AG's conclusions and actions based on the results. Without access to the complete methodology utilized, we referred to earlier the reluctance of the AG to share the test results, except the conclusions, not the actual hard copy of the results. The testing procedures and analytics employed in the full results themselves, it's impossible to place any confidence in the announced outcomes of these tests. However, we, these are the scientists who wrote this paper, can assert confidently that the conclusions that a majority of supplements lacked any botanical at all based only on the results of DNA barcoding tests were unjustified. Okay. So yeah, that you would agree with their conclusions?
Absolutely, I would.
Okay. This is a good point at which to pause, because we generally divide these podcasts into two parts. I got more questions for you coming up in part two.
Okay.
So stay tuned for part two of our discussion with an expert. She is a PhD in toxicology, and she is the Vice President of Scientific and Regulatory Affairs for the Council for Responsible Nutrition, Dr. Andrea Wong. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.